Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents A Tony Mandolin Mystery 1. A Slight Case of Death by Robert Lee Beers. Narrated by Bradley Smith. With performances by Bradley Smith, Elliot Dash, Patrick Busink, Matthew Keenan, Rick Rowan, Andy Clements, Jason B. McIntosh, Michael Glenn, Gregory Linnington, Don Ursula, Jacob Yeh, Tia Shearer, Kimberly Gilbert, Nora Ashrati, Andy Brownstein, Terrence Aselford, Chris Stinson, David Jordan, Zeke Alton, James Konacek, Yasmin Toison, Ken Jackson, Scott McCormick, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Matthew Pauly, and Michael John Casey.
My name is Tony Mandolin. And yes, I know the name is a great straight line, so go ahead, get the jokes and puns out of your system. I've heard more than my share pretty much all my 30-plus years. What I do is find things, all sorts, and I've gotten so good at it that some folks tend to think I'm gifted with some sort of ESP or mumbo-jumbo. Nope, I'm just stubborn. Over the years, through a combination of word of mouth and, to be honest, dumb luck, I've managed to solve some pretty big cases and unfortunately embarrass a few influential members of San Francisco's police force. I keep an office that could have had a second career as a large coat closet. It's located in a second floor walk-up in an office building not located in one of the Fog City's better business districts. This month, my in-basket held mostly bills, and my out-basket held a partially eaten deli sandwich. I was busying myself with trying to find out what word fit in the Chronicle's crossword that used seven letters with hardly any vowels when she came through my door. It took a couple of seconds before I managed to get my eyes in focus. Thick, red curls cascaded past her shoulders, framing a heart-shaped face. She looked like Jessica Rabbit, only real. I figured blinding her with my witty repartee would be my first step. She smiled, but it looked forced.
Are you Tony Mandolin?
I concentrated on the vision before me. She was wearing red to go along with her hair, and the outfit looked like it cost more than what I paid in rent last year. A whiff of very expensive perfume floated my way. Yes, that's me. What can I do for you, miss?
I need your help.
I noticed she'd avoided mentioning her name. What sort of help?
Your ad says you find things.
That's right.
What kinds of things?
All kinds. She sat in the chair across from my desk.
I see. My sister.
What about your sister, miss?
She's missing. She didn't come home, and it's been 2 days.
Probably a kid sister. With that kind of competition, you could see where the younger one would feel unfairly put upon. The kid most likely ran away to a friend's house. An easy job for easy money. I see. What's she look like?
Like me. We're twins.
Ooh, boy. I leaned further back in my chair and considered. The city has its own red carpet set. A pair of twins looking like that had to have some sort of notoriety. A thread of memory began nibbling around in the back of my brain. All right, Miss Whoever You Are. I'll need to know a lot more before I can even decide to help you.
I don't know if I can trust you.
Same here. I waited. We were playing a game of cat and mouse, and I wasn't sure who was who.
Very well. My name is Roxanne. Roxanne Driver.
All of a sudden, my interest went into deep freeze. She knew I recognized the name. Hell, I lived in the Western U.S., didn't I? The Drivers were one of those families everyone reads about, but no one outside of certain elite circles ever meets. Miss Driver and her twin were heirs to a fortune some governments would like to control. According to the papers, Daddy earned a cool $2 billion last year, but only because business was a bit slow. This was way out of my pay grade. The Drivers lived in a highly rarefied atmosphere and had for a couple centuries. Their great-granddaddies did all the work, while the last couple of generations have spent their time in degeneration and other enlightening pastimes. Contrary to the type, the current patriarch, Randall Driver III, spent most of his time buying and selling businesses. He was the odd one, a worker. The man was responsible for dozens of companies and thousands of careers. He petrified me. I shook my head and picked up one of the papers cluttering my desktop. I held it out to her. Fill this out, and I'll see if I can work you into my schedule. You could have shipped fish with the temperature of my voice. I wanted her out of my office, now. She didn't look at the paper. Her lower lip pouted.
I see.
I turned back to my papers and looked up into the barrel of a .38. She held it rock steady, pointed at yours truly. Mama Mandolin did not raise a fool. I kept my eyes level with hers and placed both hands on the desk.
Are you planning on using that thing, Miss Driver?
Only if I have to.
And that reason would be... We sat there for what seemed like hours, Roxanne holding a bead on me and trying not to sweat. Finally, she broke a little.
I love my sister.
Yeah, I can see where that'd make any woman pull a gun on a stranger. That was stupid. Her eyes flashed and she brought up her other hand, moving into the weaver stance.
I won't be mocked, Mr. Mandolin.
I held up my hands. Right, as if they'd stop a .38 slug. Your sister is missing. All right. How long has she really been missing? Was it just the 2 days? Where did you last see her? What are her habits? Who does she hang out with? Have you gone to the police? I don't know about the other departments, but there's a couple of detectives downtown I know who are pretty heads up when it comes to solving missing persons cases. With your family, I'm sure they'd do something. My rapid-fire questions rattled her. The gun lowered as she looked away and thought. After a second, it went back into the purse. Maybe I wouldn't have to change my pants after all.
I can't go to the police.
Why not? Her daddy owned more than half of the Bayside waterfront and most of City Hall, and she couldn't go to the police? They'd fall all over themselves trying to please her just because of Daddy's money. Hell, the chief would probably order her lunch while she waited. She crossed her arms under her breasts.
Because I can't. Let's leave it at that.
Okay. I make a point of never arguing with a lady with a gun, even if it was no longer pointed at me. Closing off that option also left out Pat Monahan, one of the few city detectives who didn't hate my guts. So... how long has she been missing?
Like I said, 2 days.
Has she done anything like this before? Tell me something about her usual routine. She chewed her lower lip. I could see she still had trust issues.
Look, Miss Driver, if you want me to help you, I'll need to know some things. Some of them probably personal.
Very well, I'll tell you. The last night I saw Randy, we went slumming. We had heard about other girls doing it and having a great time. We thought it would be fun, sort of a guilty pleasure.
I managed to keep my face professionally interested. Put me down for an Academy Award.
Go on.
At first, it was fun. Most of the men in our circle have considerably higher opinions of themselves than they deserve.
The women, too, but that's just me.
But I found myself becoming bored after the first couple of hours. As diverting as the men were, we had nothing in common, and they were only interested in one thing.
Welcome to the human race, sweetheart.
So, you left, but your sister was still partying?
Yes.
And that's the last time you saw her?
Yes.
Where was this?
A bar called the Somersault. We had never been there before. I usually stay away from that portion of the city.
I wasn't surprised. The club she mentioned sat in the 600 block of Eddy Street. At night, the seedier element prowled the shadows and alleys in search of prey. Take a girl with Randy's looks, add a few measures of gin, shake and serve. Easy pickings. What time did you two separate?
I'm not sure. I'd had a little too much to drink. It was after midnight when the cab dropped me off at home. I went straight to bed. When I woke, it was after 9. That's when I noticed Randy hadn't come home at all.
How could you tell?
Her bed hadn't been slept in. Our rooms sit across from each other, and the maids don't come until after 10.
Okay. Do you recall anyone in particular paying attention to her more than anyone else? Did she seem attracted to anyone over and above the other men you saw there?
No. Not that I can recall.
Have you got a photo of her I can take with me? Believe it or not, most folks don't have that much of a memory.
Here.
She held out a wallet-sized photo. I had to force myself not to glance back and forth between her and the photo. Randy and Roxanne were indeed twins, identical, right down to the tiny mole on the left of their identical pouty mouths. In spite of their family history and fortunes, the girls were stunners. I shouldn't have much trouble raising a trail. Now, about my fee. She reached into the handbag again and pulled out a horse-choking, thick wad of bills. She dropped the roll onto my desk.
I don't believe in dickering, Mr. Mandolin. It wastes too much time. If that isn't sufficient, let me know. I just want you to find my sister. Even if...
I eyed the money. Yeah, sure. I'll need a contact number. A business card landed next to the wad.
That is my private number. Leave a message if I don't answer.
Then she walked out. Her expensive perfume stayed to flirt a little longer. I picked up the card. It was glossy white with black printing, a phone number, and nothing else. The rich, they like to do it in style. I left the office after counting my fee and ambled south toward Market Street. Lunch hour was just finishing up, which meant the folks I wanted to talk to were beginning their day. I stopped to grab a dog and a bit of street gossip from Bill Bunty. Billy had one of those mobile hot dog stands you see around various corners of the city. Most of those hucksters sold mummified lengths of possible protein with all the flavor and texture of cardboard, but without cardboard's fine pedigree. Billy, on the other hand, figured he'd do better by selling more dogs for a bit less profit. His dog started as real sausage and finished up as real food. The only thing keeping Billy from becoming a real entrepreneur was his love of his own cooking. Billy didn't just run to fat. For him, it was a full-fledged, joyous race into obesity. But for every pound the guy put on, the big man upstairs added a few more of character. Billy loved people, and they loved him in return. The guy made Santa Claus look like Scrooge.
Tony! How you been, Paisan? Long time no see. Hey, care for a Polish? I got a nice batch in this morning.
Billy held up a sausage with his tongs. You bet, Billy. I'll take mine with some mustard and a beer. One of Billy's dogs with a little kraut and a lager added up to my idea of nature's most perfect food.
So, Tony, what's with you these days? Got anything going on?
I washed down my last bite and fished out the photo. Billy's eyes widened.
Who's she?
Someone out of both our leagues. She went missing night before last. You see anything like her today?
No, can't say I have, but I'll keep an eye out. Hey, you ask Frank about her?
Nope, I was hoping to put that off for a while, if possible.
Aw, come on, Tony. Frank's an all right guy. He just likes to play around a bit.
That's what I was afraid of. Of course, to Billy, Hannibal Lecter would have had redeeming qualities. I pocketed the photo and headed towards the Somersault. The Somersault sat in the middle of the block. A few doors after crossing Larkin, I saw him. A large black man wearing a bright pink dress a couple sizes too small, extra long fake eyelashes, and brilliant red glistening lipstick. teetering on size 16 high-heeled pumps, he wore a matching feather boa that wrapped itself around shoulders that should have been in football. My guts tightened. Frankie, as he preferred to be called, saw me, waved, and began mincing his way through traffic toward me. Arms the size of most folks' thighs wrapped themselves around me and squeezed. I could feel my ribs creak as I tried not to breathe in the overwhelming perfume.
Tony, you don't know how glad I am to see you. You don't call. You don't write. Now, what is a girl to think?
Frankie planted a huge kiss onto my right cheek. I could feel the mark he left there.
Frankie, please give a guy some warning before you do that.
I untangled myself from his arms and stepped back, both for my image and for my breathing. Frankie used perfume by the bucketful. I'd smelled this one before, but couldn't place it. Frankie pouted and toyed with his hair. It hung to his shoulders, elaborately curled and glistening with fairy dust sprinkles.
You don't love me anymore.
He twisted the toe of his right pump against the pavement.
Jeez, Frankie, give me a break, will you? I'm on a case. I don't have time for this.
Oh, sorry, Tony.
Frankie looked down at me from his towering 6'8". The high heels put him near 7 feet. The seriousness didn't last long. He smiled big and tweaked the cheek that still bore traces of his lipstick.
It's just that you are so damn cute.
Frankie.
The flirting vanished like a hooker's virtue.
What you working on, Tony? Another grandma lost her cat?
I ignored the jibe and pulled out the photo. There's a missing girl. Here, did you see anyone looking like this around? She was partying at the Somersault 2 nights ago with her twin. I imagine they'd be hard to miss, even in a crowd.
If you like the type, I suppose.
Come on, Frankie. If anything screwy has gone down, you'll hear about it. Your record's too good.
Frankie preened.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Let me see now. I was there between 1:45 and 2:30 in the morning. I had just finished a lovely gin fizz when Lowell and his latest came by. You know, she is such a tramp. Then there was a party with a couple of obvious dye jobs. I mean, no way they were real redheads. Wait. There was this big fella with a mustache. Military type, you know. I mean, I couldn't see clearly. But he was talking with a girl that might have been her. Oh, I am sorry, Tony. That is all I can tell you. But then again, the place was crowded. Maybe you should check with Chang. Now, he's tending bar in the Somersault right now. Well, at least he was an hour ago.
Thanks, Frankie. I appreciate it.
Ooh, any time, lover.
I pushed through the door into the bar and looked around. Inside, the Somersault looked a lot like every other gin joint in the city. Low lighting and dark walls lined with deeply padded booths. Off to the right, the bar ran almost the length of the room. Only a couple of the stools held occupants, and a few of the booths held some couples in them. The smell of spilled booze hung in the air, mixing with that of aftershave, perfume, and bar food. Behind the bar, a mid-20s Asian worked at mixing a drink, Tommy Chang.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mandolin. What would you like to drink?
I'm not drinking, Tommy. Frankie says you might recognize this girl.
You bet I do. She's the twin, right? Yeah, she and her sister were here night before last. They made the rounds all right. A couple of sweet pieces. Had a lot of guys panting.
Anyone in particular pay attention to them?
Not that I can think of. Be right back.
He took a drink over to one of the booths and held a short conversation with the guy sitting on the outside, closest to the door. In the dim light, I couldn't see much in the way of detail, but the profile and the mustache looked familiar. Mustache glanced in my direction and then said a few words to Tommy. Tommy nodded and headed back to the bar. I waited while he occupied himself with busy work. Mustache must have said something, or Tommy knew more than he was telling me. After a while, you can get to where you can read people. This lad was coming across like a headline.
Okay, Tommy, give. What did he say that spooked you?
It's nothing, Mr. Mandolin.
Tommy moved to the other side of the bar.
What can I get you?
The fact that he wouldn't meet my eyes spoke volumes. As he pulled a draft, I picked up Randy's photo and pushed away from the bar. I was right about recognizing the mustache. Lieutenant Rorsch, of San Francisco's finest, made a point of making himself known and not necessarily in the nicest way. He worked vice out of the metro station. One of the questions never answered was how a guy living on a police lieutenant's salary was able to afford $1,000 coats. Rorsch didn't like me. Well, hell, over half the force didn't like me. They viewed PIs as a life form somewhere below that of defense attorneys. Making a choice between being liked and earning a living, I'd stopped worrying about that opinion years ago. I could see the knuckles of the guy sitting next to Rorsch clench as I dropped into the seat across from them. Now that I could see his face, I recognized him too. Fats Muller, an associate of the Lucchesi family. Fats and I had a couple of run-ins a number of years ago. He lost. Both times. There'd been real good feelings both ways ever since. Hi, Fats. Rorsch, what's going on?
Beat it, Mandolin. You're fouling my air.
There was a bowl of peanuts in the center of the table. I reached in and grabbed one.
You know, I gotta wonder why a member of the Lucchesi family is getting all cozy with a vice cop. You two set a date yet? Is there a registry?
Police business, Mandolin. Butt out.
Ah, so Fats is your stoolie. Is that it, Rorsch? Nice coat, by the way.
Anytime, Gumshoe, just say the word.
Sit, Muller.
Rorsch glared across the table at me.
All right, Mandolin. What's this all about? Why are you sniffing around? What's Driver's daughter got to do with you?
What Frankie had told me clicked. Rorsch was the big fellow with the mustache.
I might ask you the same thing, Rorsch. Seems like you were one of the last people to see Miss Driver before she came up missing. Care to elaborate?
You gonna let this slug push you, Walt?
Rorsch looked at me. His eyes said a lot of things, most of them unprintable.
What are you saying, Mandolin?
You heard me.
Walt.
He's got nothing. Okay, Mandolin. I was here two nights ago. So I talked with Driver's kid a bit. What of it? She took off with some barfly dressed in an expensive sweater. What's it to you?
The door to the bar opened, and a shape full of curves walked in and headed straight for the booth. She stood there looking down at me while Rorsch's face developed an ugly smirk.
You're sitting in my place.
I looked up at a living, breathing, wet dream. Straight, thick, platinum blonde hair framed her face and continued down to below her hips. She was firm in all the right places and padded in all the wrong ones. Smoky gray eyes regarded me through thick lashes. She smiled, and Mr. Libido wet his pants. I swallowed. I'd seen her picture before. She'd been hanging onto the arm of Antonio Lucchesi, the city's top mobster. This was a date with death as the payoff.
You heard the lady, Mandolin. Move it.
I moved. She didn't. Which meant I either got up close and personal with her chief attributes, or practiced my dance steps around her torso. I danced. The coward's way out.
See you later, Mandolin. Drop by anytime.
I walked back to the bar. So, there was another unanswered question. What was Lucchesi's pet blonde doing sitting down with Rorsch? I'd seen her latched onto the mobster's arm in several news photos. Not one of them ever mentioned her name. Tommy still had a hard time meeting my eyes.
Tommy.
He played at wiping the bar.
Tommy.
I can't talk, Mr. Mandolin. They're watching.
You saw the guy she left with, didn't you?
Tommy's nod was barely discernible.
Who was he, Tommy? Tommy, I hate to do this. I'm going back over there to give them the impression you talked. If you do talk, I'll go over there and tell them you're under my protection. Your choice.
You're a son of a bitch, Mr. Mandolin.
I know. What'll it be, Tommy? You've got 1 second.
All right. Randy spent a lot of time talking with the lieutenant there. Mr. Lucchesi's nephew, Brandon, came in and the lieutenant left. Before he left, the lieutenant looked like he wanted to start a fight, but he didn't.
What about her sister, her twin?
She'd already gone by then. She left before the lieutenant arrived.
So the remaining twin took off with Brandon Palmetto. Tommy nodded. What was she wearing?
Some red dress. It exposed a lot of skin.
When did she leave?
About 2:30 in the morning.
Did she look happy?
Like she scored big time.
Right. Thanks, Tommy. I walked back over to the table, where Rorsch and the blonde were busy smiling at each other. Thatz saw me coming and nudged Rorsch. I leaned forward, took Rorsch by his expensive Italian tie, and twisted. His face took on a nice tomato color. You listen to me, Walter. If I hear of any harm, any hassling at all of Tommy over there, I'm gonna hold you personally responsible. It won't matter to me if you're a cop or not. You got me? I released the tie, and he fell back against the padded booth. Thatz started to rise. I opened my coat. He saw the handle of the Colt and settled back down hard.
Mandolin, you just made the biggest mistake of your short life.
Is that a threat, Thatz?
That's a promise, crud.
You just remember what I said about Tommy, Rorsch. Nice talking to you. I gave Tommy a nod and headed back out onto the street. Brandon Palmetto was a spoiled kid with a fat money roll and a bad boy attitude. He got that way because Uncle Lucchesi had almost as much influence in the mayor's office as Old Man Driver. Seems politicians don't mind the source of the money as long as it lands in sufficient quantity. An alley stood off the western wall of the building that housed the Somersault. A couple of trash dumpsters sat at the far end, surrounded by scraps of this and that. Empty liquor cases leaned against the wall in a haphazard stack next to a pile of vacant pallets. I headed into the passage. It held the usual collection of grime. I avoided the fragrant traps left by various dogs and checked around the bases of the dumpsters. Light glinted off something near the back corner of the first dumpster. I bent closer. A used syringe. A couple of tiny Ziploc bags, empty, of course, lay a couple of feet from the syringe. Someone had themselves a good time. Using my pen, I picked up one of the bags. Yep, that's what I suspected. Heroin. There was another scent, something in the background I couldn't identify. Whoever sold the smack probably cut it with something like sugar or worse. I stood, towing the needle under the dumpster. It didn't pay to pick them up. No telling what little nasties remained behind. As I stood, a bit of color in the shadows caught my eye. It was hanging onto a sharp spur, sticking out of the back corner of the dumpster. I moved closer. It was a piece of fabric, blood red in color and shiny. Could be silk, or one of the imitators. I wasn't that sure. One thing was certain. It was out of place in that alley. I tugged it off the spur and moved back into the light. Once there, it looked enough like silk to be convincing. A scent came off the scrap. Perfume. The same scent had been hanging around Roxanne. It was beginning to look like I was going to have to be the bearer of bad news. Families like the drivers don't take well to bad news.
I don't believe it. I won't.
Look, Miss Driver, I'm not accusing your sister of anything yet. All I'm saying is that right now, it does not look good. She was wearing a red silk dress 2 nights ago, was she not?
Yes.
Do you and she share the same taste in perfume?
We're twins, Mr. Mandolin. We share the same taste in everything.
She was seen leaving the Somersault with a known mobster who has ties to the drug trade, Brandon Palmetto. The paraphernalia I found in that alley was in the same place as what appears to be a scrap of her dress. It carries the scent of the perfume you were wearing this morning in my office. You weren't by any chance in that alley last night, were you, Miss Driver?
Don't be absurd.
Then, without any evidence to the contrary, that can only lead to one theory. You know what that is.
I won't listen to any more of this.
That was the last I heard from her. I continued to search for her twin, but beyond Brandon Palmetto, the trail went cold. For a couple of days, I rummaged around, turning over a ton of dead leaves and coming up with nothing. I even spent some time skirting along the edges of the Castro, seeing if any of Frankie's friends had heard or seen anything. All I got were a few blank stares and a couple of scary come-ons. Whether or not people choose to believe it, the prostitution business is a growth industry with its own version of stars and bums. A certain part of my trade dips into that world now and then. Over the years, I made a few contacts. A nagging little voice in the back of my head told me that if Randy had gotten involved with Palmetto, there was a chance she would also have tried the slug's other preferred activity. Hookers talk to each other. There's a regular gossip grapevine amongst the girls. If one of them had seen Brandon or Randy, the news would eventually circulate around to the few I could count on to talk. I ran across one of them at the corner of Post and Taylor a few days after my phone call to Roxanne. The night was typical for a midsummer evening on the bay, cold and foggy. Trixie Jones was a skinny little brunette who stood 5 foot nothing. She appreciated the half pint of gin I bought her in the corner market.
Thanks, Tony. You know, you're an okay guy for a square.
Anytime, Trix. Maybe you can help me out a little.
Why, Tony, I was beginning to wonder if things had died down there.
That's not what I mean. I'm looking for some info.
Oh.
I looked at the bottle. She followed my look.
Okay, ask. What are you looking for?
I told her the story of what I'd collected so far on Randy Driver, Palmetto, and the wall I ran into. I even showed her the photo. When I finally ran out of story, she looked thoughtful for a second, chewing her lip.
Sorry, Tony. I'd tell you if I had anything, but I don't.
Thanks, Trix. Stay warm. She raised the bottle in a toast.
L'chaim!
2 days later, I found out what happened to Palmetto. Headlines splashed across the top of the Chronicle's front page told me, along with everyone else in the Bay Area. Mobster's nephew found dead of apparent overdose. The story mentioned that the body of a prostitute was found near Palmetto, but gave no name. There was no mention of Randy, no mention of Rorsch or Fats. In fact, there was no mention of anyone else who should be involved in the story, at least as far as I thought. It said the bodies turned up in an alley off the Tenderloin, near Golden Gate and Leavenworth. I shook my head. That was one tough area, especially at night. You have to wonder about a neighborhood where even the hotels have locking iron gates over their front doors. I put the paper down with the distinct feeling I had missed something. The feeling continued to nag at me as I got ready to leave when it hit me. Randy's trail remained as cold as yesterday's cod, and since that last call where Roxanne hung up on me, every phone call I made trying to reach her also ran into a blank wall. As far as I could tell, both girls were now among the missing. I broke all sorts of land speed records getting back to the paper. Rifling through the sections, I found it. There. Buried down below the main story was the short blurb about the unnamed hooker's body found next to Palmetto's corpse. The cop interviewed for the article described her as NHI, copper slang for no human involved. The next line sent a chill down my spine. The hooker was a redhead. Palmetto had been seen leaving the Somersault with a certain redhead. Randy. Sometimes I hate having that sixth sense. I picked up the phone and made a call to Pat Monahan. I caught him at his desk.
Monahan.
Pat, it's Tony Mandolin. Yep, Pat was a real friend. Pat, I
need a favor?
This one will help you get that gold badge, Pat. I'm serious.
Yeah, right.
What do you know about the Driver family?
What?
You heard me. What do you know about Randall Driver's family?
You don't sound it, Mandolin, but you must have been hitting the bottle early today. Tell you what, I'll meet you at Patty's after my shift ends and I'll help you finish what you started.
Lieutenant Monahan, You might be interested in knowing that the hooker they found next to Palmetto's body just might be one of Randall Driver's daughters, Randy Driver. No answer. I couldn't even hear any breathing. Pat?
Get your ass down here, Mandolin. Come in by the side entrance. I'll make sure the desk sergeant buzzes you through.
Monahan didn't react that way ever. The man had over 20 years under his belt as a city cop. Something I had said rattled him. That thought stayed with me as I went out the door. Before I left, I made a point of dropping the silk scrap into a Ziploc and slipping it into my pocket. Monahan worked out of the Central Division, a gray blockhouse of a building a couple blocks south of Union Square on Vallejo. I caught the Stockton bus to Vallejo and walked the block to Central. When I reached the side entrance, the rain had started. The desk sergeant let me in just like Monahan promised, but he had his own fun at my expense by waiting until I was soaked. I headed up the stairs. Like I said earlier, my puss wasn't all that welcome in the cop shop. The sight of me squishing down that hall cheered up many a blue shirt. Monahan wasn't much better.
You decide to swim here?
Glad to brighten your day.
Coffee?
Thanks. Okay. What's going on, Monahan? Why the rush to get me down here? If you have info, you could have told me over the phone and I'd still be dry.
I shouldn't be showing you this. If the captain finds out, I'll be spending my last few years before retirement ticketing people in the park for not picking up after their dogs. Go ahead. Open it.
My head swam with questions. I picked up the envelope. Inside were a few sheets of typewritten paper and a couple of photos. Pulling out the photos, I looked at them. The red hair was familiar. Monahan just sat there watching me. I put the photos back into the envelope.
No wonder she hasn't called.
That got me a raised eyebrow.
Roxanne Driver was a client of mine. This is her, I think. Identical twins. You ran the ID? She hired me to find her sister. All I've been doing is spinning my wheels. I couldn't find her sister. Hell, I couldn't even find her after a while. Now, I know why. I also have a feeling I know where Randy is. Pity.
Why?
You get me that coffee, and we'll talk. Being in a building populated by police, I expected the coffee to be bad. Not much of a problem there. I was used to bad coffee. However, Monahan managed to find a brew so putrid even I had a hard time choking it down.
Ugh. Not bad today.
There's no accounting for taste.
All right, Tony, what's this about Driver's other daughter? Are you telling me that the man who's bringing down three kinds of hell in the commissioner's office is gonna have to be told that we not only have no clue as to who did it and his daughter, but that he now has lost both of his girls and we didn't know about it?
The coffee got better. Or maybe my taste buds were being erased. Not in so many words, but you've got the essence of it. Monahan ran a hand through his thinning hair.
Great God Almighty. How can you be sure?
I can't. Not until I check out the body of that so-called hooker that came in with Lucchesi's nephew last night. I told Monahan about my conversation with Tommy Chang and my little run-in with Rorsch and Fats. I finished up with Tommy's description of Brandon Palmetto and his red-headed date.
Taking on Rorsch, that was stupid. The lieutenant has contacts, and if he's inclined, you could suffer a nasty accident.
You boys in blue are such a loving family. Witnesses saw Randy Driver leaving with Palmetto. Palmetto's... was a known drug dealer. I found a used syringe, a couple of empty dime bags, and a scrap of silk that could match what the body is wearing, if she's who I think she is. I held up the Ziploc with the fabric sample.
You are a piece of work, Mandolin. Come on.
The morgue was a nice, toasty 50 degrees. Bare hospital gown green walls enclosed a space roughly the size of a school cafeteria. Fluorescent fixtures illuminated stainless steel tables running in a single row down the length of the room. One member of the coroner's staff was in the room working on a stiff. She was munching on a donut as she worked.
She wore a white lab coat over a pair of bib overalls and a green and blue flannel shirt. An assortment of chromed handles stuck out of the coat pocket.
Good morning, Dr. Ignatova. This is Anthony Mandolin. We need to see the woman they brought in last night, the first redhead.
She peered at us myopically through glasses thick enough to double as armor plating.
Oh, good morning, detective. The first redhead, she's right over here.
The doc opened one of the cabinets set into the wall and pulled out a cloth-covered body. There was the requisite toe tag dangling from the requisite toe. Her toe tag had three initials on it. N-H-I. No human involved. The coroner's office had the same level of cynicism as the boys in blue. Ignatova pulled down the cloth, uncovering the head.
Oh, God. I can't... Oh, that's just...
Monahan walked away from the table. I looked down at a dead version of the vision that had come into my office a few days ago. Behind the blue lips and gray skin, Randy was the spitting image of her sister, right down to the expensive scent. Not even the formaldehyde could kill that. Is there a cause of death? Ignatova exposed the right arm.
It appears obvious, doesn't it?
She popped the last of the donut into her mouth. Randy's arm showed track marks. Old track marks.
No wonder they tagged her as NHI. It looks like she'd been using for years.
At least Palmetto went with her.
Palmetto didn't OD, Mandolin.
He pulled out the slab and threw back the sheet.
He told the papers that to keep the boys upstairs happy.
Brandon Palmetto's puss stared back. I didn't feel sorry for him. It was easy to see he had not used any of the poison he sold. The insides of his arms were baby bottom smooth. His chest, on the other hand, had a hole in it the size of my fist. I was glad I didn't have to look at his back. A shotgun up close and personal can make an awful mess of a body.
No problem telling how this one died either.
Ignatova peered over Monahan's shoulder. The city's ghouls had their own sense of humor. Monahan flipped the sheet back over Palmetto's face.
Nope.
So, the DA's office doesn't want Lucchesi to know his nephew was shot?
Hell of a city, isn't it?
Do you want to see the other one?
Sure, might as well.
She's right down here.
After pulling out the slab, she paused, one hand on the hem of the sheet covering the body.
It looks like they did everything together.
Roxanne had the same track marks as Randy.
This is gonna hit the city like a tidal wave of crap.
I didn't say a thing. With the evidence in front of us, neither Ignatova nor Monahan would believe what I said. When Roxanne had her gun trained on me, I had a clear, long look at the inside of both shapely elbows, neither one of which had so much as a bruise. At that distance, even makeup shows. That perfume she wore still lingered, just like with Randy.
There is just the one anomaly.
What?
I found substance similar to saliva on the marks, but there are enough differences to say otherwise. I'm still testing. It's organic, I think.
Monahan and I went back into his office.
Driver's daughter was your client. Did she say or do anything that could shed some light on all of this?
Not that I can think of. I've got some suspicions, but a first-year law student could get them tossed out.
Rorsch and Fats.
And one other.
Monahan grilled me for another hour, searching for something to keep the heat that he felt coming down from above away from his backside. He was right. Driver's connections with power over the city's top brass would go through the police department like a salt flush. On the way back to my office, I tried to feel sorry for him. It didn't work. Something about the whole mess was screwy. I could feel it, and so could Monahan, but I would just be opening myself to extra grief if I tried to tell him what I knew about Roxanne's track marks. It took a considerable amount of time for someone to do that sort of damage to skin. Scars take time to develop. I know. I have my share of them. The inside of both girls' arms looked like they'd been cozying up to the needle for years. What could do that, essentially overnight? And where did this saliva come in? I sat there in the dark for a long time, thinking. Over the years, the city had shown me all sides of humanity. Many of those sides had not been pretty. But this was just plain weird. Mandolin.
Direct and to the point, Mr. Mandolin. I like that.
Saves time. Who is this?
This is Antonio Lucchesi, Mr. Mandolin.
I see.
I'll get right to the point, Mr. Mandolin. I wish to hire your services.
Why? I don't mean to be rude, Mr. Lucchesi. The hell I didn't. But it's no secret your organization and I are not on the best of terms. I don't see it working out.
Well, let's not be hasty, Mr. Mandolin. I believe I could offer you a contract you would find hard to turn down.
I doubt that.
100,000 as a down payment, and another 100,000 upon completion. I estimate the scope of the work will cover 2 weeks. Do you still doubt?
Okay, you've got my attention.
I thought I might. You are a smart man, Mr. Mandolin. That is why you have succeeded in your profession. That and your reputation of doggedly continuing until you accomplish your task. You are also smart enough to understand why I come to you to find my nephew's killer rather than the police.
Lovely. The chief snake wanted me to find the one who whacked Brandon. As far as I was concerned, the killer had done a public service. But a couple hundred G's makes swallowing your pride a bit easier. We're gonna have to meet. I don't contract jobs over the phone.
Understandable, Mr. Mandolin. I will send a driver to your office. He will bring you to mine.
Lucchesi's office was in his house. The view alone must have added a few hundred thousand to his property taxes. The house overlooked China Beach, a Victorian mansion. It stood 3 stories high. Massively thick Monterey cypress trees bracketed the house. We passed through black ornamental gates into a drive that curved around to the back of the house. A pair of human redwoods dressed in black suits met the car as it pulled up to the back door. One of them approached my side of the car.
Mr. Mandolin.
I nodded, and Lucchesi's trained behemoth opened the car door.
This way, sir. Mr. Lucchesi is waiting in the study.
He led me down to the end of a hall, where the passage widened into a small foyer outfitted like a high-priced waiting room. He pushed the door open.
Ah, the esteemed Tony Mandolin. Come in, come in.
Lucchesi looked just like his news photos. Middle-aged, urbane, darkly handsome with a straight nose, a touch of gray at the temples, and trimly fit. Unlike the man in those photos, he greeted me wearing casual slacks and a polo shirt. The paparazzi always caught him sporting an Italian suit worth the price of a mid-sized car. He came around the desk holding out his hand. When I didn't take it, he smiled and put it back in his pocket.
Yes, I suppose that was a bit premature. Regardless, have a seat, Mr. Mandolin. You and I have much to discuss.
I don't know about much. My contract is simple and to the point. You agree to pay me X amount to take the case and Y upon completion. That's just about all there is to it.
In the typical case, that would be assumed. But I assure you, Mr. Mandolin, this is not typical. You and I both know that Brandon was not the brightest of individuals.
I had to agree. Palmetto barely had enough IQ to power a 30-watt bulb.
But he was also family. And I will not tolerate anyone killing a member of my family. That is what makes this other than a normal contract for you, Mr. Mandolin. It is well known that, in spite of the attitude generally shown toward you, you tend to work within the strictures of the police department.
A chill wriggled its way up my spine. I don't do wet work, Lucchesi. Not for any money.
That will be noted. But that is not what I want you to do.
He reached into a desk drawer and pulled out a copy of the Yellow Pages.
What is it you describe your service as? Here we are. Mandolin Detective Agency. We find things. An interesting conceit, that. Well, it would be if your record were not quite so unique. How many failures have you reported over the past decade, Mr. Mandolin?
I knew he knew the answer.
According to the people I employ, their check into your business showed a remarkable No. Make that incredible record of no failures. Not once have you let down a client. I find that simply amazing. Most men fail at least once in their lives.
Beginner's luck. He smiled, a quick grimace with his mouth, not his eyes.
As you wish. Do you have any thoughts as to why I don't wish the police involved in this, Mr. Mandolin?
Outside of the obvious, no.
And what would the obvious be?
You ruled out a hit, so it would have to be not wanting to open yourself up to any more police curiosity than is necessary. Let's face it, there's more than a few stories floating around about the various sources of income you control. Unless... A thought had nudged me sharply in the back, demanding attention. Lucchesi raised an eyebrow.
Unless what?
It goes deeper, doesn't it? You don't just want the police to stay out of your backyard. You don't want them to know you're nosing around in theirs. You think Rorsch is mixed up in this somehow, and if there's one dirty cop, there's got to be others. Perhaps someone above him adding a layer of protection in exchange for a healthy coating of grease. I was on a roll now. Lucchesi just sat there, watching me with a self-satisfied twinkle in his black eyes. I bet you dollars to donuts that Palmetto was working both sides of the fence and had caught up with him. There's nothing more vicious than a cop gone bad. Some of them make your worst look like Amish Sunday school teachers. You want me because I'm the last guy the police would include in on a case unless they absolutely had to.
Very good, Mr. Mandolin. Very good. I see I was right about you. Now, the part about my nephew is speculative, but a defined concern. That is one of the things I want you to prove or disprove. If that is the reason for his demise, then all I want are the names, nothing more.
And if it's Rorsch?
Then Mr. Rorsch will have outlived his usefulness.
It was too bad I couldn't have recorded that statement. It would have made a great answering machine message for the lieutenant. I had a brief wrestle with my conscience. The bank account won out. Between Roxanne's down payment and the wad Lucchesi was pushing on me, Mrs. Mandolin's little boy was becoming rich. All right, Lucchesi, you've got a deal.
Splendid. Splendid.
Even with the payday I had just stepped into, somehow I felt a little dirty. After Lucchesi's driver dropped me off in front of my office, I took some time to scribble down a few notes. For the most part, they posed more questions instead of answers. Number one, both girls died in the same way. Why? Two, what wasn't Monahan telling me? Three, where did Palmetto figure in this? And added to three, where did Fats and Lucchesi's bimbo fit in? And four, why was Roxanne showing old track marks when she had none the week before? One of the things about being a private investigator is that occasionally you do someone a favor. On even rarer occasions, they will return the favor. On the off chance that this was one of those times, I picked up the phone and my client book.
Hello?
Paul Verona worked over in Berkeley at one of the private labs dotting the hills above the university. Some time ago, I had managed to dig up some evidence contrary to the interests of a company wanting to profit off Paul's research into black mold without paying him. In short, they wanted to steal the little guy's idea. I pulled the rug out from under them. He owed me. Paul, this is Tony Mandolin. I've got a puzzle I need solving.
Who?
Tony Mandolin. I helped you win that patent suit, remember?
Patent suit? What patent? Oh, yes, that thing.
That thing only took nearly a full month of surveillance, digging through dumpsters, and several tense hours hiding in ductwork. Yes, that thing. Paul, I was wondering if you could help me with something.
Is it that puzzle you mentioned earlier?
Well, it could tie into your research.
Oh?
He took the bait right up to the sinker. Yeah, you told me you did some work on classifying old wounds before, didn't you?
Yes, I did, but really, Tony, it was more of a hobby than research.
Scientists. Could a new wound be made to look old?
Yes, there would be a way, but why would anyone want to do that?
Never mind that, Paul. How could it be done?
I can think think of a couple of molds that would create such an effect. They actually age soft tissues, but no one would want to use them.
Why not?
They excrete an extremely effective toxin, almost certainly fatal in about an hour. Fortunately, they do not grow well in an oxygen-rich atmosphere, not to mention that they are extremely rare.
What would such a death look like?
Like barbiturate or opiate overdoses more so than anything else. Why do you ask?
Bingo. I told him about Roxanne and Randy and the old-looking new track marks. I was now sure both died that way. Identical twins to the last. I figured that if I could find out who killed the girls, I would also find out who offed Paul Meadow.
Really? Is there a chance I could examine the bodies? Are they available? Do you have access? Has this really happened?
Whoa. Slow down there. Let me answer one question before you ask another. I could hear him opening a bag of something. When Paul got excited, he snapped. Yes, this really happened, just like I told you.
Then I will have a chance to examine the wounds?
I'll have to ask about seeing the bodies, but I know a guy in the police department. There's a chance.
I still have my card somewhere. Will that help?
I mentally slapped myself. Paul was on retainer as a consultant for the Berkeley Police Department. Monahan would feel obligated to let him in as a courtesy. Yeah, Paul, that will help. Let me make a couple of calls and I'll get back with you.
Sure. Thanks, Tony.
Now I had something else to think about. Who, besides Paul, would have access to that sort of material? Who would have the gray matter to work with it? I shoved those thoughts onto the shelf next to the other and took down the one dealing with Brandon Palmetto. Lucchesi's money sat there, burning a figurative hole in my wallet, and in spite of what I thought about the man and his business, the mule in me would not let me slack off on an accepted contract. That hole in Palmetto's back had been made by a load of double-aught, up close and personal. One of Lucchesi's lesser-known contractors, Toots Garber, was known to favor the use of a sawed-off 10-gauge shotgun in the pursuit of his duties. But not even the densest of hoods would want to incur the wrath of a boss with Lucchesi's reputation. Unless... My brain put on the brakes and hit reverse hard enough to strip gears. Someone with the money and power necessary to do so had bought the killer's loyalty. As far-fetched as it was, the scenario made sense. Roxanne and Randy's father had the power and the ruthlessness to step in with a hit if they thought it was necessary. I was never a father, but I could picture myself pulling the trigger if I was the father of a girl abused by Brandon Palmetto. Randall Driver, if stories were correct, wouldn't even think twice. I grabbed my overcoat and headed for the door. Toots was particular about the type of ammo he used. I was hoping that at least one of the pellets was still lying around the crime scene. If it matched up with Toots's brand, there was a good chance Driver wasn't a suspect. After catching a bus for a few blocks, I got out and walked down the block to Golden Gate. The fog had thickened to the point where I began to wonder if I could see well enough to make my search. Several alleys peeked out between the old buildings lining Leavenworth. I picked a side of the street and started walking the border of the Tenderloin. The first alley opened right after a small storefront that offered the latest in adult movies for $1.99. Piles of trash partially hid the alley's mouth. If this was where Palmetto spent his last moments, it was a fitting place. Skirting the trash, I eased my way into the alley. With the shadows and the fog, it was like stepping into early evening. The smell of rotting garbage rose up to greet me. I reached into my coat pocket and pulled out the latex gloves I kept there. Out of my other pocket, I pulled a small flashlight. If any shotgun pellets lay in the alley, I didn't see them. I checked both sides, came up empty, and moved on. The next alley was clean as well, which was no surprise. Aha! I hit pay dirt in the next alley. It opened up right next to a gay dive Frankie would have loved if he ever came into the T. Of course, the nice little crater in the pavement was a dead giveaway that I had found the site of Palmetto's going-away party, not to mention the bloodstains.
The fact that SFPD didn't bother cleaning up afterwards meant it had to be Rorsch's work. The creep hated that sort of thing. Slipping the gloves on, I played the flashlight around the crater in an ever-widening circle. About a foot from the crater, I caught a glint of silver. The double-aught pellet went into a small baggie and then into a pocket inside my coat. Toots preferred double-aught when he worked. He also preferred to deliver his message up close and personal with the victim lying on the ground. Face up or face down didn't matter. This was looking more and more like a problem within the Lucchesi family. Allowing myself to get so involved in looking for evidence that I forgot to keep one eye open for trouble was a stupid mistake. The shuffle of footsteps behind me was all I remembered before the lights went out. The bad breath woke me. When I opened my eyes, I stared into Lieutenant Rorsch's bloodshot baby blues. I could feel the nose of a police special under my chin.
You made a big mistake mixing in my business, Mandolin. I owe you.
Ugh, forget it. I'm feeling generous.
Still the wise ass, huh? I'm gonna enjoy this. Metro will think you're just another loser who got the short end of the stick in the T. Just another NHI.
Then he pushed the muzzle of the gun deeper into my jaw. Something connected with the side of Rorsch's head, pushing the gun away from my jaw. It went off, nearly deafening me, and then a huge black face stared down at me. Clouds of heavy perfume began replacing the lieutenant's bad breath.
Tony, you okay, lover?
I looked blearily up at Frankie.
I will be, as soon as this headache goes away.
Here. Let me help you up.
Frankie hauled me to my feet like I was a baby doll. Rorsch was sprawled face down in the muck on the alley floor. For a brief moment, I thought about massaging Rorsch's ribs with my size 13s, but Frankie was still standing there looking at me moony-eyed. I rubbed the bump on the back of my head.
What?
I didn't say anything, hon. How hard were you hit?
He reached out to feel my scalp. I backed away, but not too suddenly. I didn't want to upset the big guy. I just didn't want to be fondled.
Hard enough that it hurts to touch it. What'd you take him out with?
Frankie hefted his purse.
Oh, I keep a few 5-pound weights in here. I mean, a girl's got to protect herself nowadays.
Sure. It took a couple of days and a bottle and a half of aspirin to get back to where I was beginning to feel almost human. Eventually, I decided things had settled down enough to go to my office and to try a pot of coffee for breakfast. Rorsch's patty cake on my scalp had left me with a slight concussion. Monahan didn't want to hear about Rorsch's attempted murder. He wouldn't say why, but I had my own suspicions. Someone like Lucchesi has ties all the way to the top, and it wouldn't surprise me if the commissioner's office was leaning on the working cops like Monahan to look the other way where Lucchesi's interests were concerned.
What?
I'll take that tone with me, Mandolin. You seen today's Chronicle?
Got it right here. I haven't opened it yet.
Check the inside page of the Metro section, lower right column.
Good God.
So you get the point. Any ideas?
I shook my head, briefly forgetting that I was talking to him on the phone.
Mandolin, still there?
She wasn't a hooker. The papers got it wrong. Again.
How'd you guess? This girl had all the same markings as the first two besides the red hair, so I decided to check a little deeper. This one sang in the First Methodist Choir, and folks in that congregation, they don't even drink beer. Her parents confirmed a number of things. No way she was a hooker.
We've got a serial killer.
Bingo.
Good God.
I know you've been digging around. I want you down here inside the next hour, and I want every little scrap you dug up. I'm gonna catch this creep before this city loses another girl.